Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's free recorded interview for February 2019, a Valentine's talk for couples. This is actually one of two talks this month, and I'll go into that a little bit. But these are our free monthly recordings to support you, our listeners, to lean into light, to choose love over fear in every way you can, as much as possible, to live the good life you are meant to live. My name is Jessica Rios, and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light, and I'm so glad you're here. I invite you to please grab a pen, push pause if you need to. Go grab a pen and a piece of paper to take notes on anything that resonates with you that you can take into your life. It's more likely you are going to make it happen if you write it down. So I want to take a moment to welcome our special guest for today, Charles Zook. Hello, Charles.
Hello. So excited to be here.
So glad you're so excited. And a little background on Charles, on you, Charles. Charles Zook is a masterful relationship coach with over 15 years of experience coaching diverse couples from around the globe. And you can find more about him at charleszook.com. Charles and I, you and I have worked together for 15 years. We have, you've supported me through relationship challenges. I have learned a gargantuan amount from you, and you are one of my favorite people in the world, one of the most boldly loving and powerfully generous and insightful people I've ever met. So that's a little background on how we met and on Charles. And for listeners, the purpose of our call today and for both of our Valentine's month calls is this. So our cultural ideas around Valentine's Day mean different things to people in relationship and committed partnership compared to people who are not in committed relationship. So in these two calls, we're going to discuss some of those differences in a conversation with Charles, who you've met. And he, Charles, is our resident rock star relationship coach here at Leaning Into Light. And our hope is that wherever we find ourselves or aspire to become, we can find love and support from our community. So listeners, again, welcome. And this is, as I mentioned, there are two calls for this month. One is for couples. Not this call, and that's focused on disparate levels of sexual appetite. We'll be going more into that today with Charles. And the other one is for singles, for individuals. You know, do I really need a relationship to be happy in life? For some, yes. And what to do about that? And for some, no. And what to do about that? This isn't stuff you're going to hear a lot of other places. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad we're here. This is the good life. So let's dive in. Charles, you have said, it has stood out to me, you have said the reason most couples split up is because of differences in sexual preferences, frequency. What is the biggest challenge that shows up, you know, more in this regard, where we're focusing in the land for couples, in the land of sex and sexuality?
Several things here just pop up right away. We are narrowing our conversation to monogamous couples, couples that are polyamorous or under different categories. You know, they have a different set of options, a different reality they're living in. So, one of the things is that, if you are in a monogamous couple, relationship, then the discussion we're going to have is going to be very interesting and applicable. It's a very complicated topic, but we're going to dive in there. And I also want to mention that sex and sexuality, you know, the areas of sensuality and spirituality and connection and friendship, emotional connection, you know, these things, there's a lot going in to this whole topic. So we want to, you know, be aware that this is very complicated. When we say that challenges in the area of sexuality is a big challenge in a lot of relationships, we are again realizing that it's rarely just about sex. Sex is basically a form of communication, a form of communing is where the word communication comes from, and that sex is, you know, kind of an area where if there are other challenges in the relationship, it's going to bleed over into the sexual relationship in most situations. So you specifically were wanting to follow up on things, something that I've said is that From my reading of research and from my experience with working with couples for over 15 years, that this disparity in sexual desire between the two partners, it not only is strong and a problem that there isn't much support in our culture on how to deal with that, but it's something that actually happens in virtually every couple. Wow. I have never met a couple that they both wanted the same thing sexually at the same time, at the same frequency, the same content, you know, the same type of stuff, at exactly the same time for exactly the same duration, all the time, 100% of the time. It's just impossible. You know, you have two different people, and, you know, somebody's going to be more tired or more interested or wants to try this or doesn't want to try something because we're different people. And when we get together, that's all very exciting. And who are you? And, oh, I want to find out. And what sex would you like? And, oh, that's going to, wow. And, but we get to a point that we kind of get in a groove and it's a deeper conversation, but there's a part of the relationship that likes predictability rather than things that are not predictable. Things that are not predictable are scarier by comparison. And we get into a groove, and then it can be challenging to get out of that groove and, you know, do something other than what we fall in the habit of doing. And then the relationship starts feeling very habit-oriented as opposed to new and expansive and growing and exploratory and real, and we're talking with each other. Commonly in the research, what you'll see is that people break up because of communication problems, or people break up, a common number one reason is affairs. But if we talk about communication problems, we can see where differences in sexuality would be at least an example of that, if not the biggest example of challenges with communication. And it doesn't take a lot of algebra to work backwards from somebody's having an affair. If the parties are actually monogamously inclined, and that's something we mentioned at the beginning, if the partners are monogamously inclined, an affair is usually because the feelings and needs of the two people are not being met within the relationship. And one of the things that happens is that people, you know, if I can't eat at home, I start eating out. So this challenge with this disparity, especially because there's so much shame in our culture, there's so much weird ideas around sexuality. We can have sex with people, but we don't like to talk about it. I mean, it's weird that it's easier to get naked and have sex than it is to actually talk about sex, but that's the culture we live in. It's very uncomfortable to talk about these things. So it's very complicated. Another thing that we mentioned was that kind of stereotypically, we think about the man wanting more sex and the woman wants less sex. But statistically, the research shows that approximately one third of those relationships is the woman wanting to have more sex. And two thirds of these disparity situations are men wanting more sex. I actually even question that. I think it might be closer to 50-50 if there wasn't kind of the shame around sexuality, especially what's imposed on women, around sexuality. But it's not, mostly men wanting more sex at a level higher than two thirds. It's about two thirds, one third is what the research showed.
Fascinating stuff to hear directly from you, who have worked with so many couples and you've heard their intimate, close stuff. They're bringing it to you because they really want help with it. And this is what you see, and this is what the studies have shown that you've read. You know, it is fascinating to, I guess what's most fascinating to me is that this is the biggest thing that causes people to break up, this and related pieces of it. And, oh, let's not really talk about it. So it's like, wow, I'm grateful right now to be talking about it openly and to have you to be able to share, you know, all your experiences with it. So, or some of them. So,
yes.
Question that I have rising is sex a need or a desire?
Good. This really underlies the issue. You know, if someone's to say, I want to be married to you and I want you to only eat the food that I cook, you know, there's kind of an implication that I'm going to cook you some food. And if I didn't want to cook you food, there'd be an immediate question about, well, I'm hungry, what am I supposed to do? And the answer would not be, you should just not eat. You know, there would be either I need to feed you, or you're going to have to do something else about getting fed. And, you know, maybe you could feed yourself, or maybe you're going to go out to a restaurant, but there would be some conversation for you would be doing something about that. If we want to reference Maslow's hierarchy of needs, Maslow puts, he calls it reproduction, but what he's referring to is sex. He puts that at the very foundational level of with physical needs like hunger and shelter. And a great debate around that, about whether or not Maslow should have included sexuality, reproduction at that level. And what my interpretation would be is that there are certainly some human beings that the need for sex occurs as a need. When they don't have sex, they're thinking about it. It's kind of taken over their brain. They got to address it. They want to, you know, I got to solve this problem. It becomes a physiological, you know, I'm horny. I need contact. I need. It lives for a certain portion of the population as a need. There are also some people that occur as sex is an option for me. I'm asexual. I am not interested. I used to be interested, but I'm not anymore, or, you know, whatever the variation is. Maybe that's physiological. Maybe it's genetic. Maybe it's like spiritual practice that they've gotten to that point. But what occurs for certain examples of people that are not feeling sex as a physical need does not mean that that therefore applies to everyone else, that they also has to be not a physical need. So I think in the range of human beings, we just have to accept that not all people are equal. And there are some people that sex is essential and they want to be in a relationship where sex is considered essential. That would be an ideal relationship for them. And for other people, sex is an option. Maybe I'm interested in it once in a while. Maybe I'm interested in it rarely or not at all. And if those two people are in relationship together, well, we have a classic example of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And there's another layer to it, right? Because I'm just thinking back, I have an almost 6-year-old child. And when I was pregnant, sex felt like a need. It was sort of something going on in my body that said, and as soon as I gave birth, for quite a while there, it seemed like an option for sure. Not a strong desire, not even much of a desire at all. So I guess I'm bringing this up because in pregnancy and early parenting, you know, after retirement, different parts of our lives produce different results in terms of whether we need it or we don't need it, right? We go through those phases.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And then, you know, the spiritual practice, and I want to focus on meditating, or I'm going to go join an ashram, or, you know, physical things that go on, cultural implications of, you know, there's a lot of sexual stimulation in our culture. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, lots of variations there, which makes the idea of monogamy very challenging. It's like, hey, I love you. You know, we're the age we are now, and I hope we always stay the same as we are right now. I promise to never change. You promise to never change. And then guess what happens? Time goes by and we grow and evolve. And the most predictable thing is that we're not going to stay the same. And that can put can make it very challenging for a monogamous couple. Mm-hmm. I want to be clear that, you know, I am not arguing for or against monogamy or polyamory. I think some people like sexual preference gravitate towards monogamy, and some individuals gravitate towards polyamory. And again, our culture is not good at helping us identify that or talk about that or be in communication with that. And I think a lot of times people get in relationships that are a mismatch between someone who is trying to be monogamous, you know, to be societally acceptable, when they really, in a more ideal world, they would realize that they are more inclined to be polyamorous. Very complicated, especially in the culture that we live.
Yeah, and in the culture that you create, Charles, there is a lot of welcome for however a person is showing up, monogamous, polyamorous, wherever they sit on the sexual preferences, you know, who they want to be with, and all of it. You, in that area and many others, have an open beautiful, wise door leading to, you know, for you to work with people on all these fronts. So I just want to say that I know that about you. And mm-hmm. listeners, as you are here with us with Charles, if you want to get in touch with him, because he is awesome as a coach, you can find him again at charleszook.com. So I share that piece. And moving on, you're welcome.
Yes. What else are you curious about?
Curious about a lot. So when there are disparate levels of sexual need or desire for a monogamous couple, what can they do?
Okay. Well, one thing I have to strongly include so that we do not lose track of it, I may mention this multiple times, but we have to have room in the conversation for the area of vibrant consent. There is nothing that we are suggesting or talking about that anyone should feel coerced, obligated, internally or externally. You know, sometimes we just think of coercion coming from external. But societally, the people I talk with, male and female, sometimes there's a sense of, it's an internal monologue of, well, I really should have sex. I don't know if I feel like it, but I really should. I mean, I said I was going to, or I got married and I said I was going to, or, you know, it's like this should energy is completely against the idea of vibrant consent. So that's a whole nother talk probably in that whole area, but there's nothing that we are saying that suggests anybody should have sex if they feel coerced or don't really want to.
So, great. Good to be clear one. About that. Yes.
Yes. And that's challenging because we live in a culture that has been built on a whole bunch of coercion, mm-hmm. you know, economically, financially, you know, racially, sexually. Oh, man, so much coercion that we are trying to awake ourselves out of. So it kind of shows up in our lives and then we go, oh, wow, that's weird. I don't really, that's not cool. And we're becoming aware of it individually and as a culture, and it's very important. Okay, so there's a quick metaphor I'm going to walk us through to get the feel for this. I want us to imagine there's a really popular roller coaster, and it's so popular they put in a second one right next to it. And in these two roller coasters have the ability, they can kind of start at the same time. So, Jess, if you were in the front of the one roller coaster and I was in the front of the other one, they pull the switch at the same time, you and I are going to be going through this roller coaster. We're going to be, hey, you're right there, kind of like in the passenger seat almost. You're right yep. next to me. And we're going click, 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 click up, and we're going click, ooh, down, and we're having the same experience. And it's so, you know, human beings like this. We like to be in harmony. It's like we like to go to the same movies that we like to go to, or the same activities, or we want to connect with people. And your roller coaster, my roller coaster, oh, they're so in sync. And we get down, oh, that was so much fun. Let's do it again. We get in line. We get back. We get in the front. We're in the front seats of the roller coasters again. But they goof up. And my roller coaster left just a little bit before yours. And it's like I'm going click, click, and you're still at the starting line. And then, you know, you're starting to go click, click. I'm going over the top and I'm going wee, and you're going click, click, click. And through the whole thing, you feel like you're not in sync with me and you're not catching up. And we get to the ride and we go, oh, that wasn't near as much fun as the first time because we're not in sync with each other. Hmm. And physiologically, this is important to us at a scientific quantum physics level. There's very interesting information about this. But just as a bottom line, human beings like to get in sync with each other. Hmm. So when we meet each other and it's like, oh, let's have sex. Great. I want to have sex. And we kind of prioritize being sexual with each other because it's new, because it's what happens when you're just meeting people and it's like, yeah, let's get together, have sex. And it's this important thing. And maybe it's a big challenge for our situation in life, or maybe it's not, you know, because we don't have kids or whatever, but we make it a priority. And we both make it a priority because we kind of know if we don't, you know, it's like, hey, it's the weekend. Now I don't really feel like having sex. It's like, what? Don't you love me anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, it's foundational to the relationship that we're going to have sex with each other. And we treat it that way.
In the beginning.
So what happens?
You're talking about in the beginning.
Yes, in the beginning. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so the relationship develops over time. And, you know, there are internal changes, there are external changes. Maybe we have kids, as for instance, what you mentioned earlier. But, you know, we start going, oh, I'm really more into Netflix, or I'm really tired, or I'd rather do this, or I'd rather read. And our roller coasters get out of sync. And so we wind up with this sense of our roller coasters are not lined up. And this can kind of solidify into kind of a role where one person is the one who wants sex more frequently, and the other person is the person who wants it less frequently. And we kind of get into that's who I am, that's who you are. And it kind of solidifies. We can have a thing that's called role nausea. I don't like being in that role. I'm always the one who's pestering for sex. I'm always the one that is saying no. You know, so this is something we work on in relationship coaching. So basically, with this roller coaster metaphor, what we have is roller coasters that are out of sync with each other. So if you just have that image of roller coasters that are out of sync. So the question that we are now getting to that you asked was, well, what do we do with this? So we have basically four options that are obvious to me. I'm open to that there are more. One of them is we quit monogamy. You know, we either consciously with a communication about we are going to have an open relationship or a polyamorous relationship, or a non-integrous, non-communication of we have an affair. But we use monogamy as a way to get out to solve this problem of our roller coasters aren't synced up, but I can sync my roller coaster up with this other person. And now I feel like I'm getting my feelings and needs addressed. It creates huge complications in the primary relationship, especially if there's not clear communication, which again is unusual because it's easy to have an affair. It's hard to talk about, you know, because we live in that culture. So that's one option, is we abandon classical monogamy. The second option is the person who wants sex less often can move up their frequency to the frequency of the person who wants to have sex more frequently. This is going to be really hard on the person who wants to have sex less often. They are going to have to, this kind of gets into almost a tantric where the couple is prioritizing, I'm committed to you. Part of being committed to you is that we only have sex with each other. I don't want you to go without food. I don't want you to go without sex. And we are going to, with the idea of vibrant consent, we are going to figure out ways so that we can have sex more frequently, which is going to satisfy the person who wants sex more frequently. And it's going to be a very big challenge for the person who is inclined to have sex less often. And there are things we can do about that that are in harmony with vibrant consent. That's a big challenge. We work that all out. That was the second option. Third option, the person who wants to have sex more often can slow the roll down to where the person, the frequency that the person who wants it less frequent is. That's going to be really hard on the person who's going to slow down their preferred frequency. There's going to be spiritual practice involved. How do I be with myself? There's all kinds of challenges that go in there. How can we stay connected when I'm wanting sex and you don't want to have sex? So there's challenges there. So we could quit monogamy, one. We could have more sex, hard for the person that wants less sex. We could have less sex, hard for the person who wants more sex. The fourth option is we live in a world where our roller coasters aren't in sync. You know, we're just on different wavelengths. There's tension between us. You're not happy. I'm not happy. Maybe we're talking about it. Maybe we're not talking about it. But those are the four options that I see in actually working with couples.
Okay. And on the fourth, you mean we live in a world where we're on different wavelengths and mm-hmm. we just leave it like that. And it's kind of the option of we're not going to address it.
This for couples that are not having an affair, this is actually the most common place that we wind up.
So leave the tension there. Leave it alone. We're not going to make changes.
Right. Person who wants sex more often, you're frustrated, you're not happy. Person who wants sex less often, I'm not happy, I'm always getting bugged for sex. And that's just where they live. It's kind of a Newtonian, it's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And if you talk with a couple like this, they'll say, oh yeah, you know, let me tell you about my partner, always wanting more sex. And it's like, oh yeah, I get so tired of being approached for sex all the time. It's like, I don't even want to be approached about sex. I'm so tired of hearing about it. And it settles into the way it is. And this is where most couples live, is their feelings and needs are not being addressed. They're not being discussed. There's no communication. There's no effort. There's no possibilities. They've tried what they've tried and it hasn't worked, and they feel kind of stuck. And that setup, number four, speaking from my view as a relationship coach, is not sustainable. That tension, that feeling's not being met, sexuality, you know, we're in different wavelengths. It's kind of inviting number one to happen. It's like, hey, we're not addressing it. We're not talking about it. Oh, there's this other person that I know from my outside life that is really super interested in having sex with me. Or there's this, maybe I'm the person who wants less sex. There's this other person who's a friend of mine, and we just go so in depth about how horrible it is that my partner wants more sex, and we're really connecting emotionally because this person really supports me in not having more sex. That's kind of an emotional affair. It doesn't have sex in it. So number four is not a sustainable environment.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to, you know, point to the feeling of, I guess it's empathy in my heart that I have around this fourth option that exists with mm-hmm. most couples, basically tolerating the mediocrity in their connection sexually. And I do see that that's where most couples seem to sit, in my experience anyway. And it is sad. And I've been there myself, and it's not necessary. So I'm grateful again to be on this call with you, where we're exploring different possibilities, where we're taking a conversation that doesn't happen often, and we're having it. So let's go into, Charles, you mentioned the first option was quit monogamy. Can you mm-hmm. say more about those options for clarity, the elements
sure.
of quitting monogamy?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as a baseline, I mentioned this earlier. I view monogamy and polyamory as kind of innate preferences. And we've had culture that has strongly favored monogamy for largely patriarchal reasons. In terms of the enforcement of it, the impact of it. And so I think that, there are people who are inclined to be monogamous. It's like, if I could really be happy, I'd like to be in a relationship with a person, and my feelings and my needs, including sexuality, are being addressed. That's really what I would like. I would be completely happy in that situation. I really don't have any innate desire or need for variety of sexual partners. And the polyamorous people, you know, often polyamory has not been culturally endorsed largely. There are cultures, if we go back into anthropology, there are matriarchal cultures that were basically polyamorously inclined, but they're not the dominant. They do happen. And so we wind up with people who they want to fit into a monogamous, that thing about we want our roller coasters to line up. We want to fit in. We want to be cool and like everybody thinks we should be. So we have people who are really inclined towards polyamory. Polyamorous people, if I had, you know, lunch with, you know, a Judy, and my wife didn't get upset because I had lunch with Judy, but if I had sex with Judy, in a polyamorous world, those really aren't that different. You know, sexuality is an activity like lunch or tennis or something. I may be oversimplifying. It may be an important thing that they do, but a polyamorous person feels very comfortable with themselves and their partner. There isn't that, like, I really would prefer us being together solely and specifically. I would really be most comfortable if it was okay for me to have relations and sexual relations with other people, and for you to also. Now, there's a lot of complications in polyamory. Sometimes people, you do your thing, I don't want to hear about it, or you do your thing, I have to hear everything about it, or it has to be pre-approved. I mean, there's all kinds of variations that go into the complexity of polyamory, but it's different than monogamy. So sometimes we wind up with somebody who is inclined to be polyamorous, trying to fit into a monogamous relationship. So I'm really polyamorous, but I'm going to try to be monogamous. And then this person winds up having affairs because they're actually inclined to be polyamorous. Hmm. And it's not really about problems in the relationships. It's about I'm really polyamorous. Or sometimes we wind up with monogamous people trying to be in a polyamorous relationship because it's cool and I should. And polyamorous people are telling me that monogamy is patriarchal and it's horrible. So I try to be in a polyamorous relationship. But I'm just really not comfortable. It's kind of really hurting my feelings that you're having sex with other people. And I don't really want to have sex with other people. I really just want to have sex with you. And I'm doing this thing with other people because I want to be connected to you, but I really just want to be connected to you. And so polyamorous is almost kind of like a cost that you pay to try to have that monogamous relationship with that special person. In both these cases, it's not going to work out. So we don't really have the cultural and communication skills to really deal with those things. Another complication I've been mentioning, the cultural and the patriarchal levels in this, the gender messes that we're trying to get ourselves out of in our modern generation.
Yes.
So another very hugely complicated area about this is that with the area of vibrant consent, which is very essential, culturally, when the man wants more sex, it is seen as his problem. And that he shouldn't be wanting more sex, and he shouldn't be trying to get sex out of his partner that doesn't want to have sex. You know, that's all wrong, and it's very bad that he wants more sex, and, you know, bad dog. You should not want more sex. And, you know, so it kind of gets embedded that I'm a bad person because I want more sex. And I'm asking something of my monogamous partner. We said we were committed to each other, including sexually, but I'm starving to death over here, very stuck kind of a situation. We wind up with the same situation, but we switch the genders, and we wind up with, in approximately one-third or more of the cases, the woman who wants more sex. But in this situation, it's like the man is kind of bad because he's restricting her from getting her needs met. He's controlling her. He's being patriarchal. You know, he's not letting her fulfill herself sexually. And who is he to control her sexuality? He should either be satisfying her needs in the relationship or allowing that it is fine for her to get her needs met otherwise. I'm not going to tell you what the solution is to this. It's a big problem in terms of how we interact with genders regarding sexuality. You know, going back to a woman who has lots of sex is, you know, a slut, and a man who has lots of sex is a stud. I mean, you know, we're trying to let go of that stuff, but it's built into us so deeply that it's going to take time for us to tell the truth about this stuff and get it sorted out in a way that works for us individually and culturally.
Yeah, time and conversation and being open about it. You know, I'm 43 years old, and one of my youngest, well, my youngest friends are 2, 3, 4, and 5 years old. But, you know, one of my youngest adult friends, she's probably 25, and I can just see the evolution in her in terms of what she's been exposed to, what she's okay talking about, what she's welcome or willing to try sexually, that for me would have been like, oh no, you know, and it takes time. It takes these conversations. So Charles, this last, you know, subject of vibrant consent, and you said it's a complication. It's, you know, you really emphasized how complex this is. And I see that. And I just want to make a note that I'm fascinated with this inequality. And I do see there being a lot of different depths to it, layers to it. Nothing we're going to be able to go into further on this call. But where I do want to go is for monogamous couples who want to create the sexual life that works for them. They're in it. I want to make this work. How do you help couples do that?
Fantastic. Yes, let's get to work. We have this kind of fairy tale idea. You know, when I meet the right person, I'm going to live happily ever after. And then when things aren't happily ever after, we go, oh, you must not be the right person. You know, and that's a very Newtonian way to look at things, that, like, is this a metal chair or a wood chair? You can ask that question, you can get an answer, and tomorrow the wood chair is not going to magically turn into a steel chair. It can't do that because we're talking about Newtonian stuff. But Newtonian doesn't really apply very well to human beings. human relationships. They're much more describable using the ideas in quantum physics, the science of possibility. And for the application here, what we want to do is we want to move out of that Newtonian, describe the facts of how it is. Basically, I'm being like a movie critic or a restaurant critic. You know, food is being served to me and I have an opinion about the food. I really like this food. It's wonderful. Or this food isn't really that good. You know, it's the difference of going into the kitchen and actually becoming a chef. Okay, what am I going to make? You know, so this conversation that you are asking me about right now is we're moving from movie critic to movie director. We're moving from, you know, restaurant critic to chef. How, what are we going to actually do to create something here?
Stepping in.
Very exciting.
Personal. Yeah. And power. Yeah.
Yes. And it's a lot of work that we don't really see modeled when we, in, you know, media, we see relationships that either are horrible or are working wonderfully. You know, we don't see people working to have a relationship work well. And, but anything we do, college education, a business, raising kids, I mean, cleaning the kitchen, everything takes effort, but somehow relationships are supposed to be magically effortless. So shifting into this, what are we going, let's put lower sleeves up, but what do we want to create here? Appreciative inquiry, which is a derivative field of emotional intelligence, instead of the common conversation of, okay, what's wrong? Okay, let's fix it. Appreciative inquiry is, what's working well? Let's do some more of that. So one conversation we have is, when the two of you are having sex, what's going on? What happened that we're having sex and it's working? And we, you know, we're very individualistic and, you know, some people it's better if it's fast and furious, or it's better if we're talking about it all the time, or it's better if we share our feelings ahead of time, or it's better if we don't. You know, it's not like there's a one recipe that works for all individuals and all couples. We're way too diverse for that. So we actually start getting into conversations about when we're having great sex, even including in the past when we've had great sex, what was happening? So we can get ideas from that. And then instead of wishing it was like the good old days or wishing it was like that vacation that we had when we were walking on the beach, we can be creative chefs, movie directors, and actually recreate the components that contributed to this wonderful experience. And instead of it being, oh, that was so wonderful, like a peak experience in life, we can start being people that create peak experiences. There are ingredients that go into having great sex. One formula that I use a lot with my clients is three components. Oh, you asked me where that came from. It came from that book you recommended, Come As You Are.
Mm-hmm.
And the author recommends for having a positive sexual experience that we have a low stress environment. So we want to create kind of a container where we're not stressed out. If we have a stressful life, we want to, like, okay, we're going to have an hour where we're not dealing with that stuff. So low stress. And we have high sensuality. So we're going to be touching and, you know, close to each other and skin. So low stress, high sensuality, and high eroticism. So we don't want that sensuality to be like, you know, the massage person is giving me a massage. You know, and when we go get a massage, we don't want erotic. We want a massage. But when you want to be erotic, when you want to be sexual, you want to have that low stress, create some boundaries around the rest of your life challenges. High sensuality. Let's start touching each other and, you know, sharing massages with each other, whatever it is. And let's make it sexy. I don't feel like it yet. You know, one of my sayings that is complicated. It's not a golden rule that applies cleanly all the time. But in general, the idea is that the emotion follows the motion. So in the past when we've lowered our stress and we've raised our sensuality and we've raised our eroticism, what happens is I get into it. I hear this very frequently, not all the time, but I hear it very frequently. I really wasn't, you know, kind of like really thinking that's what I wanted to do, but we did the precursors. We set the stage. We put the music we like on. We lowered the lights. we took a shower, we're all warm and fuzzy, the temperature, and, you know, put on the sexy outfit, whatever it is for whatever couple, we go start going through the steps like we did when we were first together. And guess what? Start feeling like it. Oh, now I'm starting to get into it. That's we need that kind of love and support. So that can be one idea, but looking at what creates, be creative about sexuality rather than just like, oh, I like it or I don't like it.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Stepping into a place of creative power. And we do spend a lot of time complaining, and that's not a place of creative power. So I love the recipe, and I just want to share, because you did mention the title of the book, Come As You Are. The author is Emily Nagoski, and it's a wonderful book on women's sexuality. Really, she takes everything we've ever talked about and she goes another direction, and she's very, very deeply researched and wonderful. So I highly recommend that book. Charles, can you just take a moment to share, what is a tantric relationship?
Oh, okay. That's cool. Now this is, I mean, basically our Western ideas around a tantric relationship are, there's a whole bunch of fancy yoga positions that gymnastic people participate in for who knows why, but, you know, maybe it's cool to do all those different positions. Not really what tantric, the word tantric, is actually, weave, you know, to weave, and it's basically weaving our souls together, maybe, you know, kind of that direction. So tantric relationship, as we can apply that, it's basically of all the spiritual paths we could have. You know, some people, their spiritual path is how much money I can make. I don't care how many people I hurt. Or maybe my spiritual path is I want to be great at my profession, or I want to be a great parent. You know, it's like, what is important to us? Maybe it's Buddhism, or, you know, Christianity, or this church community, or yoga. I mean, so we can have different spiritual paths. For my money, relationship is one of the most challenging and fulfilling spiritual path available. And what makes it so challenging is that it automatically involves two people. We're doing this together, and we really can't do relationship as a spiritual path by myself. I was just thinking there are exceptions to that, but we won't go into that. Relationship as spiritual path is basically, I am here to learn and grow by being in relationship with you. I am going to learn how to love myself more by the love I receive from you. I'm going to learn how to make it a priority to love you rather than other things that might be on my mind right now. So in meditation, if I'm doing a follow the breath, you know, it's like, okay, I'm inhaling right now. Okay, I'm exhaling right now. Oh, wait a minute. What about my taxes? Oh, not now. I'm not going to think about taxes right now. I am meditating. I'm going to follow the breath. And similarly, a meditative practice in using relationship as spiritual path would be, oh, I want to be with you right now. I want to connect with you. Oh, what about the groceries? Oh, not now. You know, we're not going to do groceries and taxes and stressful things right now. We are going, my meditation is being in love with you, connecting with you. What are you feeling? What do you need? How could I make you feel more loved? And in this relationship, there's this 100% me loving you and 100% you loving me. And in practical terms, a lot of times this winds up with, right now I want to love you. You tell me how you're feeling. And we move away from a term that we use often in conflict resolution. We move away from co-processing. It's like in the movies, you know, in a heterosexual movie, she's getting pleasured 100% and he's getting pleasured 100% at the exact same time. In the reality of sexuality in a relationship, a spiritual path, that's not really happening. It happens sometimes, but most of the time it's, darling, I want to give you sexual pleasure. What can I do to give you sexual pleasure? What are your fantasies? What do you want to feel? Faster, slower, left, right? Yes, massage, non-erotic, erotic, whatever you want. I want to do that. Of course, I'm getting a whole bunch of pleasure with my lover by being her lover. And then there's another moment where it's, oh, that was wonderful. right afterwards or the next day or what, you know, the next week, whatever it is, it's like, oh, I want to be there for you. What do you want sexually? So it's choosing. So we have that vibrant consent. It's choosing that when I am going to allocate time to the relationship, that is the highest priority. You feeling loved, you feeling that I'm with you, that I care, including part of you is the sexual part of you. I don't love everything about you, but I don't like that genital part. It's like, no, I love the whole of you. And it can be very healing to be in this kind of a relationship where not feeling loved and accepted throughout our lives gets healed by being completely loved and accepted by our partner.
You know, as my life has gone on, I look at what you're talking about, and I never really knew what I still kind of don't really know what a tantric relationship is. It's like, but actually, I feel like the purpose of committed partnership is spiritual. So again, we don't have more time to go into this piece today, but so much fascinating stuff that you're sharing through your many, many hundreds of hours, thousands of hours of calls with couples. So Charles, any more resources to suggest? You mentioned the Emily Nagoski book on women's sexuality, mm-hmm. Come As You Are, which actually has workbooks in it and stuff. So that's really cool. Mm-hmm. There's also, go ahead and share a few more if you would.
Good. A favorite of mine, a couple of favorites here. We love the book Sex is Fun. The authors are Kaper, K-A-P-E-R, and Lynch. Sex is Fun. It's just an idea book. It's a fun book, and you can kind of go through, it's not the kind of book you read from the front cover to the back cover. It's the kind of book you look at and go, ooh, what about that? That looks interesting. Another favorite that really is kind of approaching relationship as this spiritual path, Bruce Lipton, Lipton, The Honeymoon Effect, is very powerful in terms of how having relationship as spiritual path not only addresses sexuality, but it really affects the whole of our lives and be able to powerfully create the entirety of the life that we want to create with relationship as the kind of foundation of that spiritual path. Another favorite of both you and myself is Esther Perel, P-E-R-E-L. And, Mating in Captivity. She also has some really great stuff on YouTube. So, these are good books for resources, for ideas. And of course, I love it when somebody listens to this and they email me and they have a question. How does this apply in this specific situation? Or what do you do? I get busy, so I don't always get back, in 1 hour, but within a day or two, I get back to people and answer their questions. If somebody wants to talk with me for a few minutes, I'm happy to do that. Some people want to do coaching with me. That's fine if that evolves into that, but I'm very accessible and enthusiastic about sharing information that has people's lives be more loving and more fulfilled.
You really are. And I've spent hundreds of hours with you on the phone over the last 15 years, and you really are enthusiastic about this. Genuinely, it comes from deep in your soul to be giving in this way. And I thank you for that. And I thank you for how much more confidence and serenity and all kinds of beautiful things there are in the human experience because of the work you do, Charles. So thank you so much for being here today, sharing so enthusiastically.
Can I share one more thing?
Yes, please.
The ultimate reason that I'm so enthusiastic is the impact this has on children. Mm. When adults deal with this stuff in functional, hard work, practical ways to make their relationship better, that's what the kids are looking at in terms of what they are going to model their relationships on. And what children want is for their parents to have loving relationships. So, give me a peaceful environment to be in and show me what a harmonious relationship looks like. So when I go out, I'm following a healthy model rather than an unhealthy model. So the children are really what motivate me for all this. So just wanted to throw that in. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Charles. And thank you, listeners, for being here once again to listen to our free monthly recording at Leaning Into Light. Again, I'm Jessica Rios, and it is a great joy to know that so many of you are getting meaningful things out of these calls, out of these interviews and conversations. So if you found this useful, you can show love today with somebody in your life who might be sitting at a desk all day or commuting long hours, and You can share it with them. I'm not on social media right now, and it's great to take a break. If you are, I would love it if you would share this on social media. And you can find all our monthly interviews on my blog at leaningintolight.com. It's on the conversations page, and we wish you rich, deeply gratifying relationships that make your life more of what it was meant to be. Take care.